Welcome to the Back to Business podcast presented by the Patika Wealth Management Group. This is James Patika. I'm a financial advisor here with the Patika Wealth Management Group, and I am joined today by John Patika Jr., who is one of our portfolio managers. John, welcome.
Thanks, James. And also one of the better looking brothers of the Patika Wealth Management Group.
So well, I appreciate that's your personal opinion, but we appreciate you joining us today. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about some themes here post COVID-19. Just wanted to see if there's anything you wanted to open up with.
Well, first, I would like to extend a congratulations to you, James. You got married last weekend, and he probably was one of the only marriages in the month of May in town.
Yeah, it was a shocker for many people, and not because of COVID-19, but people thought she was just going to run out on me. So that was a very nice surprise that she showed up on that day. But we were 6 feet apart, and we had no more than 10 people in the church, so everything worked out there. But you know what? That's enough about me. Let's talk about getting back to business, and let's focus on the themes that you're seeing post COVID-19.
Some of the themes that we've been seeing have already been in place pre-COVID-19. I mean, when you look back on just planning for that golf weekend for your wedding, we wanted to do something in the state of Georgia, either hunting quail or going out on a weekend golf trip, and know nothing really other than, you know, in the state of Georgia as far as spots. So I had to actually go and pull up Google and Google search what great tourist locations there are for those particular activities. And naturally, as you're going through these different web pages, it travels with you as you go on social media or my news articles that I read and research reports. You know, you're getting those little banner ads that are following you all over the place. And when we finally narrowed it down, two things that really stuck out to me on those web pages for these resorts was they had such a great digital presence. I get on there and I'm looking at, you know, a guy with a hunting hat and his, you know, his bird dogs are running around behind him, and he's talking about the history of the land and what they do and what a day looks like. And I was just absolutely captivated compared to the little mom and pop, you know, the throw them up websites, and it was like there's maybe a picture here or there, and they said you hadn't contact this person, and it just didn't catch me. And I was like, okay, well, I've never been to this place. I'm sure it's good, but I see the video and I'm captivated as a virtual customer going to that website. So when I did that, I was able to look at different houses, because we were actually going to rent a house for this trip, which would have been really fun. And you get a 3D view of the house. I could actually walk inside of the house using my keypad, like I'm actually there physically in this virtual world. So it was really neat. And I was sold on the one place over at Sea Island Resort, because it just basically had everything that we needed and just a short drive from Clearwater. So when I went to do it, I booked it, and finally I actually got to a human. The point of this selling process, this buying process, was I was actually already sold. I needed to talk to a human to figure out how to make the transaction. She comes up on the phone, and of course she was always there in the little chat me box as I'm going through the website. Sends me a virtual contract, and I electric signatured it, e-sign. And then I did a digital payment with my credit card. And instantaneous, boom, I was done. And once I got done, I got done with my contract, I went to our cousins and I had to go get their money for their rooms. And everyone used an app that was able to transfer cash from their bank accounts to this app. So I was able to be paid instantaneously, which is amazing technology. I can only imagine, you know, back before this app, you know, I would have to be waiting for people to arrive and give me the cash, and hopefully they, you know, didn't stiff me at the door. But once I got through all of this, and you're just thinking like, wow, how many companies reached out and touched me through this buying process? You know, there's the digital ads, you know, there's a digital customer relationship. I never even met this person, and she's emailing me and talking with me on the internet. The digital payments that were had to be sent securely from one place to the other. And this is all pre-COVID-19, right? Those things are already there. So, you know, it just makes it more clear and brings these technologies more to the forefront.
Yeah. And I mean, we're talking right now, this was pre-COVID-19. So what we want to focus on, John, is post-COVID-19. So through that process, obviously, you only had very small human interaction, and it seemed like a very smooth process. But what are you seeing post-COVID-19 that maybe you wouldn't have expected before the whole pandemic situation?
Yeah, so there's a few themes, right? So those themes are there, and now they're kind of brought out. It's basically, how are these services and these businesses able to cater to that virtual customer, right? That could never actually, especially now we're in this, you know, this lockdown, people are isolated, even though we're gradually reopening. But how do you cater to that virtual customer? And, you know, like I said before, these resorts, you know, they had the video where I'm able to be sold. I can feel like I'm there. I've got the virtual reality where I'm able to experience these things. The digital payments that I need to make sure that there is absolutely secure and I trust the source in the bank that I'm using to transfer these payments. And cybersecurity has had a huge uptick on bad guys out there trying to break in because they know people are remotely working. They know people are remotely shopping. And they're finding that as being a big opportunity. So we see cybersecurity as being a huge issue here. We see 5G technology. The 5G technology is rolling. It's coming. People are working at home. People are virtually shopping. And they need speed. They need speed to look at, and you know, some people will stream videos on their TV. Some people will play video games, which is actually pretty crazy to me. You know, just a few weeks ago, I'm sitting on my couch on a Sunday and I'm playing with the kids and I'm looking at the TV, and obviously there's no sport, live sports going on right now, but there was like a NASCAR race on and my son loves cars. So we're like, hey, look, John Thomas, there's a car coming around. And I thought it was just like last year's race, and they're, you know, they're going around in circles and he's loving it. And then all of a sudden they zoom out and have these people that have their video games set up like in their rooms and they have a fake steering wheel, you know, and they're talking on their headsets. And I'm like, wow, I didn't even, it was so real that it looked like a real NASCAR race. And these guys were, you know, like Dale Earnhardt Jr. And they were actually racing live on this video game. So it's just really incredible. But it's very important that they have the right speed and bandwidth to do those things. So there isn't a lag when people are, you know, Zooming or they're doing these video conferences with family and friends and these happy hours. You can't have a lag. It's not cool to have a lag.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting when you talk about the 5G technology. Before this whole crisis came about, really people, when you would kind of talk to them about 5G, it was, okay, yeah, my video downloads on my phone are going to be a little quicker. But now that we're getting into this remote and virtual working environment, we're seeing 5G is going to play such a big role in that transition, just because that data needs to be moved so much quicker than it was before. And then you talk about cloud computing as well. So all of this data is going to be collected virtually. Where is it going to go? We're not talking about a big database and software in the office. We're talking about a bunch of people on their laptops, sitting in their living room, sitting in their home office. Where is this data going to be collected? Much more people on the computer, cloud computing. So we talk about all of this. This is the Back to Business podcast. So how do you see this affecting businesses going forward? What are the changes you're going to see post-COVID-19? Are we going to see the virtual world, the virtual at-home working? Is that going to stick?
Yeah, and I think you're going to get a little bit of both. I mean, look at my home situation. My wife works at Home Shopping Network, and she's working virtually, remotely now at home. And she's sitting there on her Mac. You know, they're using Microsoft Outlook and using Skype and WebEx and all of those tools that she has, all the technology that she had at work, you know, at her fingertips at home. And it's pretty incredible. She loves it. You know, she saves an hour drive each way. She's able to play with the kids more after she picks them up from grandma's at night. And she doesn't have to worry about that crazy drive. So in that environment, you know, what companies are making money? Well, obviously, cloud data storage is extremely important. All of that information needs to be stored somewhere. And you also need the speed of 5G technology. to make sure everything is moving fast. And also you need cybersecurity. Like I said, there's a lot of predators out there that are trying to prey on people that are being lackadaisical, honestly, with their own information. Matter of fact, you know, with this surge, you saw Zoom. Everybody says, I'm going to these Zoom happy hours, these Zoom meetings. Well, the CEO of Zoom came out and said there was major issues with their security. They were getting people that were Zoom bombing their happy hours, or they would have family get-togethers and they'd have a bunch of people on their Zoom calls, and somebody would come in and put like inappropriate pictures, and they call it Zoom bombing. And there was a major issue here at UBS. We're not even allowed to use Zoom because of all the security issues. So that isn't going away. The other thing too is businesses are kind of seeing this and they're saying, wow, this could be a really, if we're actually being just as productive working from home, using this technology, you could possibly cut real estate space. We're seeing that across the board as people and this technology has evolved. I mean, 20 years ago, there's no way we'd be able to pull off what we're pulling off today. We're able to work from home and being just as efficient with all of the technology. Here in our office in Clearwater, I mean, my father, John Sr., James, and I, you know, we work and come into the office every single day. We have staff that are rotating in 1 or 2 days, just make sure the mail is processed and the checks go out and everything is clear. We're able to do that anywhere we want. We just feel that it's comfortable to come into the work, to the office, and we like to have that type of structure. I know people that are working from home, they need to deal with a whole new structure. Now, there is some issues with productivity. The schools, the summer camps, they're still closed. If you're a person that has to stay at home and they have no place like daycare for their kids, it's going to be a struggle. And it's going to be something that people have to deal with. But eventually, we're going to get back to a more normalcy. And those schools will eventually open up. And it'll start alleviating some of that pain for the people that are working remotely. But it's coming. There's changes. And it's never going to be like, oh, we're all going to go all remote or everyone's going back to work. I think it's going to be a little bit of a mix, and to see what the right formula is to make sure that you're still productive and that the business is still being serviced. And, you know, and quite frankly, the revenue is still coming in to make sure that they're operating correctly.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about kind of the revenue still coming in. Some of these companies like Zoom, they're very profitable right now. But a lot of the concerns we're hearing is there's still companies out there cutting dividends. So what do you have to say about the concerns of investors of having these stocks cut their dividends and cut out their cash flow?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they always say, these companies in the market are cutting their dividends. Well, the market is made up of individual companies. Okay. The market is just the combination of all of them, the accumulation of all of them. What you want to look for and what we really focus on are companies in the United States that are just large cap, beautiful, fortified balance sheets with solid free cash flow, low dividend payout ratios to support their ability to continue to not only pay a dividend, but to grow a dividend. And it's really, really important. A lot of companies, they paid out too much in their dividends. They come and fell on hard times. Clearly, like in our example with our golf trip that fell through, that company had to refund the money. They did not make the money. They lost customers. That restaurant that we would have went to and ate, they lost customers. We didn't come here. There's no pent-up demand. They lost that seat at the table. That waiter or waitress did not collect that tip. That is money that is lost. That is money that is lost in the airlines, cruise lines, the hotels. Companies like that will never get that money back. Meanwhile, you have companies that might have pent-up demand. If I'm doing redoing a kitchen and I got to buy a oven or a fridge or a stove, you know what? I'm trying to do this kitchen remodel. The supply chains might be closed off for the time being, but as soon as they open up, I'm going to get my refrigerator. I'm going to get my oven or my microwave to complete that project. So that money starts coming back. But the main thing is to own the best quality companies that if there is an issue over the next few months of the reopening process, that they're still going to survive. They still got plenty of cash in their balance sheet.
So that, what companies? You mentioned strong balance sheets, good quality companies. What are some?
Yeah. So companies that we really like that actually fit the themes that we're talking about. You know, companies like NextEra Energy, Home Depot, Johnson & Johnson, Intel, Cisco Systems. In 2020, it's been a pretty turbulent year in the markets, but these guys have actually paid and raised their dividends. And some have raised and paid their dividends for a real long time. So those are the companies that we like to focus on. And not only that, is it important to own those type of companies, but the companies that that pay dividends. I mean, the S&P 500 right now is yielding about 2.1%. That's 1.5% more than the 10-year Treasury yields right now. And the 10-year Treasury, you know, the Fed is basically yielding nothing. They brought rates to zero during this crisis. So it's really important to own dividends because you're getting a higher payout. Plus, for taxable investors, it's even more important because the highest dividend tax rate for a taxable investor is about 23.8% compared to 40.8% for interest income. And you're barely even getting an interest as it is now. So we look for dividends that grow over time, you have a growing income stream, and you have some inflation protection there by not only owning the companies that create the inflation, meaning they raise the prices on their products, and they also raise the dividends in turn, but interest payments in the bonds are fixed. It does not keep up with inflation. However, there is a caveat to owning dividend-paying stocks. They're more volatile than bonds. Obviously, they are still an equity. And the income that is generated from just the dividends may not make sense for every investor because of that volatility. But if you're allocated appropriately, according to your risk tolerance, it's a very, very good strategy. And quite frankly, it's one of the only games in town right now to generate the income if you're becoming a, you know, nearing retirement or if you're a retiree to live.
Well, John, you know, I appreciate it. I think we're running out of time. And you know, sometimes it's hard to compliment you, especially being my brother, because your head gets a little big. But I think that was a very insightful conversation. And I took away some things, certainly. And if anyone out there is interested in some more information, we do have the publication from UBS, The 7 Themes for the Post-Pandemic Economy. It's a really great read. It's going to go over a lot of things we talked about and some additional things. If you'd like a copy of it, please feel free to reach out to me. Easiest way is email, which is james.patika@ubs.com. Or you could visit our team website, which is ubs.com/team/patika. We want to thank you for listening in, and we want to thank John for your time today. And we look forward to you guys listening in for next time.